Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming to another episode of My Angular Story. Today, our guest of honor is Chris Noring. Chris, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Chris Noring. I'm an Angular GD, and I'm also a creator of NG Vikings. I've written a couple of books about Angular and NGRX, so I'm here to chat with Aaron about all things Angular.
This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open sourced Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code devchat at sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code devchat at sentry.io.
How many books have you written?
Well, depends on if you count published books or kind of. So there's this thing called Git books, like the service with Markdown and stuff.
Uh-huh.
If you count everything, I think it's like 4 books, but published ones are 2.
So. 2. So 2 more than almost all of us.
Well, and, yeah.
And then 4 total.
Yeah, yeah. So this podcast is about Angular, right? So the official story here is 2 books. Cause
okay. Yeah. Are both of them about Angular?
They are. So one is called Learning Angular, and the other one is about NGRX. So
NGRX, yeah. Okay, cool. Books are hard, man.
Yeah,
books. It's like one of the hardest things you could do on the side.
Depends on who you are, I guess. I mean, I'm a very prolific writer, so for me, it's actually easier than videos. I think it's about finding a format that kind of works for you. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, 80% of the book writing is fun because you write a draft. 20% is the painful part because then comes reviewers and a lot of back and forth, right? So those last 20% makes you question your whole, you know, adventure into being an author. So,
Yeah, I feel you. I tried to do a book one time and I got about 70% done, and then you know how Twitter can be super not friendly sometimes?
Uh-huh.
That just scared me, and I couldn't write anymore. I hit a wall. It was weird.
I know what you mean, and I try to be brave on a weekly basis, because when I write blog posts, I tend to leave a link in Reddit, so you never know how that one's going to pan out, right? So
that's a bit like pulling a pin on a grenade and seeing what happens, right?
Pretty much.
Like, you hope nothing explodes, but you never know. So everyone, you know, most Angular developers are like, hey, I've been using Angular since bleh. When did you start using Angular?
It was a while ago. It was actually in 2015. So I started my story. It was a fun story, actually, because we weren't meant to use Angular at the time, but I was a consultant for an IT company. and we wanted to go and do this project for this big aviation company. And they talked about different frameworks, and we talked about Durandal and Knockout and, combination of those. But so the client actually insisted on AngularJS, and we were like, Angular, what is this thing, right? So we had to study at that point. So the first thing I did was to buy a book by Brad Green, who sadly is leaving Google. I just plowed through that thing in probably a week, and then we were off, right? And I ended up working on that project firstly for like 3 months, just giving them a proof of concept. And then I was pulled in a few months later to finish the job. So I was kind of stuck in total at that client for 18 months, probably. So,
So you started in 2015 on AngularJS.
Uh-huh.
And then when did you start working with Angular?
Oh, you mean it's just Angular, or formerly known as Angular 2?
Angular 2 Plus, yeah.
Right. That's a good question. I have to think back here. Probably the first time I encountered Angular was in 2016. I think it was like in an early alpha at the time. I think I was one of the early adopters, because I had my Angular meetup group in Sweden at the time. And I kind of moved that thing over to London when I moved. But at the time, the two frameworks that were talked about was like Angular and Aurelia. I'm not sure people talk about Aurelia still, but so they were very similar for different reasons. One of the creators kind of defected and built his own thing, right? Angular 2 or Angular was in an alpha at the time. And we actually ended up doing an Aurelia project for like 3 months. It wasn't a big app. And after that, I actually got to use the real Angular. Everything else is a fair tale from that point on, I would say.
You got into it way before I did. I got into the new Angular probably in like version 5.
Right.
Maybe 4. I think it was 4 and I had upgraded to 5, but like it was right on that 4-5 border.
So. It's interesting, right? Because one of my early impacts with Angular, I had just looked at it. I had just tried out my first RxJS, attempts. And I got this GDN interview, right? And the first person to talk to me was Stephen Fluen. So he wasn't an Angular team member at the time. So he was a GD, right? So that was a fun conversation to have. And looking back in history, it's fun to see how things developed. So I did not know RxJS at the time. And that actually ended up being one of my free books that I wrote on this Gitbook platform.
Okay, gotcha. You got in and then you came across NGRX. It sounds like it had a pretty meaningful impact on you. How did you come across NGRX and what is your kind of, role in NGRX?
So, I think we were still talking 2016 when I started out with, NGRX, and I didn't use it for a big project at first at work. So I just started experimenting with it on my own. And I don't think I fully understood what part it played in the beginning. It was just one of those really sweet libraries that kind of accompanied the whole ecosystem in Angular. And so my role at the time was very small, but I kind of realized that this was a thing that I really liked using. And I had been using Redux on another project with another framework. And I kind of liked the idea, and I definitely saw different angles in where it fitted. I think from that point on, I kind of realized that, this is something I want to do. So I actually talked to a publisher, Pact, and they were all interested in me actually making a book in it. So And that's how I got really deep in Yorex, because I needed to study up, patterns, approaches, when it shined, when it didn't.
And how many, Do you do workshops on NinjaRx too, or are you an author and like conference speaker? I know about that. Do you workshops?
I do not do workshops on NinjaRx. No, it's mostly talks and books and videos, actually.
That's true. You did do a video course. Tell people about that.
Yeah, so it actually came out a few days ago. I'm still working on the last few bits, metadata with some questions and answers, but it's published on the PACT site. That thing covers the entire ecosystem in NinjaRx. So I think it's 7 hours of NinjaRx covering architecture, RxJS fundamentals. As you know, NinjaRx is a pretty big system. It contains a lot of things. It's not just a store. It's entities, it's schematic, you know, different blueprints to make your work faster. Yeah. I don't cover NinjaRx data, which just recently made it to NinjaRx, but I plan to update the course. So.
Yeah.
It's a very complete course.
So if people want to, you know, learn more about NinjaRx, they can take that. They can actually get a 7-hour course online from you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. I guess could they find out by going to your Twitter? You're tweeting about it, I'm imagining, right?
As soon as I finish the questions, I'll definitely be tweeting about it and I can send you a link afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. So this won't be out for a few weeks. So probably by the time it gets out, you'll be tweeting about it. People can head over and follow you on Twitter to get updates. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, cool. I was making sure that we were making some connections there, Chris. You created, on top of some books, you created a pretty cool conference that just had its third event, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Talk about NG Vikings.
NG Vikings. We talked about NG Vikings at Angular Air, but I'm not sure how many people have heard the beginner story. So NG Vikings was born in 2017. The reason it was born, because the three of us, me, Maxim, and Sherry, we met at Angular Connect. So they had this community meet at one of the lunch breaks. I don't remember what day, but so the idea was to take all the different meetup organizers from Europe and Asia and US and kind of meet there. So I believe Maxim was the one who made everyone show up in the same room, and there were probably 40 or 50 people in there. So we started talking about creating a conf, right? Because we knew about ngConf, we knew about Angular Connect, but there wasn't much else happening, and we were trying to align all the different Angular meetups over the world. So one of the things we did was to create this big Slack room that still exists, where everyone who has an Angular meetup can get different help, with resources and what else. And so me, Maxim, and Sherry, at the time, we lived in different Scandinavian countries. I ended up moving to London. But Sherry still lives in Denmark and Maxim still lives in Norway. So we thought that we could create a Scandinavian conference. So we started playing out with different names. We thought about NG Bridge. That was a name. And the reason for that was that there's this massive bridge in between Denmark and Sweden that kind of connects them. But then we thought about it as like bridge. No one's going to know what this is about, right? So we had this poll internally in the team. So I think I was the one who said, well, Vikings, right? There's a television series and that's our inheritance, right?
Yeah.
And everyone just, you know, we didn't even care. We didn't even look back at NG Bridge. So we're like, yeah, we're Vikings. So at that point, it was important for us to be nice Vikings, because Vikings were kind of known for two different things, right? One being tradesmen and one being the part where they plundered and kind of did bad things. So it was important for us to be nice, because our community experience as meetup organizers was that of being nice and being very inclusive. So one thing we did from year one was to show this really cute picture of a baby Viking and, you know, how harmless a Viking can be, how inclusive, how nice, right? So that's a very common theme throughout all of the 3 years, is to make everyone feel welcome. Even though we don't mind, you know, there being the other parts with swords and spears and armors and whatnot, but that's all for fun, right?
Yeah.
So,
it's all part of the theme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard about it year one, and I was like, wow, that looked like an awesome event. And then I heard about year two, and then so this year I was like, yeah, I definitely got to go this year. So I got a chance to go meet your team, meet the other speakers. I felt like it was a fantastic conference. I liked the venue. I liked the speakers. I liked meeting your team. I liked it was in Copenhagen. I liked Copenhagen. So, yeah, I just had a good time. I had a really, really good time there.
Mm. It's something that's very special, I think, about Angular conferences. We often refer to ourselves as this big NG family, and for me, that's really true. Every time you meet someone at the conference, speaker or attendee, everyone feels very approachable, and I think that's something that's unique with us, and which makes it super easy to show up at any Angular-themed conference, and you will feel right at home. You're being lifted into this big and warm family. I mean, even had people say that, you know, I code React, but I'm here for the whole community spirit, because that's why I'm here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that kind of transcends tech, and I think that's a unique thing. And you know, with your ng-conf, I think you probably created a bar, that, you know, for the rest of us to follow, right? I mean, I get the same feeling at Angular Connect, ng-conf, that I was lucky enough to actually visit this year. So that there are a lot of great events, and there are a lot of great events being created and I feel with the role model of being inclusive. And I think that's a really great thing about Angular and its community.
Yeah. Bill Odom, he said it. He's who I heard say it. And he said, the second best thing about Angular is Angular. The first best thing is the community. And I think it's true. It's a pretty stellar community. Even though the JavaScript community is fantastic compared to other developer circles I've been in, I feel like the Angular community is even apart inside the JavaScript community. It's a pretty fantastic community. And I have a lot of fun with this community.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I can only agree with what you're saying. I'm not sure I found that anywhere else, and I do agree that JavaScripters are a very awesome bunch. But I'm not quite sure what created this thing, but I think for sure when they were creating the whole GD program, I think they had in mind that it needed to be community heroes. I believe it was you who wrote a very long, I don't know if it was tweet or blog post, about what it meant to be a GD. And for me, it was pretty clear writing that it, you know, the message was it's more important to be a community hero, obviously while skilled, but you know, it's not enough to be skilled. You know, you need to look at people and community and being inclusive. And without that, you can't really be a GD.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with that.
This episode is brought to you by TripleByte. Applying to programming jobs sucks. You have to put the right keywords in your resume, you spend hours and hours on the phone screens and take home projects, and that's assuming the company even responds to your application. Well, if you're a software engineer, TripleByte can help. They work with over 400 top tech companies, from big names like Dropbox and Adobe to exciting startups. You do one brief online interview with them, and if you do well, you go straight to final interviews with the company on their platform. It's like the Common App for software developers. TripleByte does not look at your resume or where you went to school. All they care about is if you can code. I've helped dozens of software developers with various credentials get jobs, and this looks like a terrific way for you to get in and get interviewed and get a job without a lot of the hassle and overhead. You can go check them out at triplebyte.com/astory. That's triplebyte.com, byte as in 8 bits. As a special offer for listeners of this show, if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus.
So, this year, me and you got to experience something kind of new together.
Oh, yeah.
It was new for me. Kind of a colossal mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. So we gave our talk at ng-conf, and we accidentally made some people feel threatened. And that was a tough time, right?
Yeah, I mean, as a community leader, that, you know, with my priority feeling that everyone should be inclusive and, you know, always being very nice to people, it was very new experience for me to experience that something I said hurt people. And, you know, when the message from my part, and I believe from your part as well, was to be self-deprecating and make people feel better about themselves. You know, when the message just take a 180 of what you planned, it feels really, really weird. So, we have already talked in this podcast about how, I've been very involved in the NGRX ecosystem in terms of producing content and making it easy for people to learn it and use it. So it felt like the message itself backfired. I think there are certain things we could have done to ensure that didn't happen. And it's easy for both you and me, being very busy people organizing cons, that, you know, we don't spend as much love as we would like to on our talks when we actually talk, because we do that as well. And I think, at least from my perspective, I think it's important to feel like there's an apology here in place from me. And I know you've written a long apology, which I think has been great and well received. So I just wanted to underline that the message has always been about being self-deprecating, because I personally was struggling with a Redux pattern in the beginning. I was never really struggling with NGRX as such. What I did do was try to take on too much at once, but it doesn't really matter what implementation of whatever pattern you have. You will get hurt if you try to learn everything at once. And I think that was the message I was trying to give. One thing I want to say, though, especially, is that when we talk about OSS, it's very important to realize that here are some people that are mostly unpaid. It's very ungrateful work. As soon as something goes wrong with a bug, with a feature, they get blamed, and they have a day job, right? I mean, they're like heroes without capes, you know, in my book. Of course, there are different ways to support them through GitHub, but sometimes a thank you on Twitter or whatever platform you choose goes a very long way. And this is my opportunity to say thank you to them. But I also think you who listen to this podcast could do the same. You could say thank you to people of NGRX or whatever library that you are using daily. I think it goes a long way, because sometimes they get a lot of heat, or more often than sometimes. This is my chance to say, I'm sorry for the way the message landed. It was about being self-deprecating. It was about making developers feel better about themselves when they struggle. It was never about the implementation of a certain framework. And if anything, OSS people are some of the best people I know.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think most people who heard our talk, they didn't even hear what went wrong. Most people, they were like, wait, what? There was a problem? But there's a group of people who did see it, and it's important that everyone who saw it understands, hey, we're really sorry. That was totally unintentional. If you could see into Chris's heart and my heart when it comes to Rob Wormall, Mike Ryan, Brandon Roberts, people would just be like, yeah, they would know. Yeah, we love them. I don't know what else to say besides they're three of my favorite people. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, I fully agree. They've been so welcoming in when I've been raising PR for the docs, because I believe it's important to be part of the solution when it comes to, you know, NGRX or whatever OSS framework that you try to improve. Super welcoming bunch. I must admit, I didn't know them as well, but as soon as I started working with them on different GitHub issues, super group. I got a chance to meet them in person, some of them at NG Vikings. I wish they were all there. So they could see, you know, we are a family, and as family members, you do mistakes. And I think it's important to recognize that you do a mistake. And I agree with your assessment there, Aaron, that some people recognize the errors in our ways. Some people just heard the message and nothing else. So I want to say that it's important to realize that what we're talking about now is not the message. It's always okay to talk about self-deprecation, about struggles to learn, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not the issue. It's how you deliver. It's really, really important to realize in what context you are delivering. and in what role you have as a community leader, that when you talk in front of a big crowd of people, that you're very, very careful. Because what you can say to 5 to 10 people, you know, openly and discuss back and forth, it's another thing to just broadcast, yeah, like we did. And I think that's where it goes wrong, or can go wrong.
And I'll take it even a little further. I think it's okay and healthy even to, if you don't like a technology, to say that. I think it's okay to say, I don't like Redux. I don't think it's okay to say, I don't like the people who created Redux. And so if you have a problem with an idea, I think it's okay. If you have a problem with a person, that's what's not okay. And what people heard me and you saying, even though it was very far from our message, and it just points out how horribly we delivered, what people heard was we were angry and we didn't like people, like specific people. And so a lot of people, as they read my blog, they're like, hey, it's okay to question a pattern. It's okay to question the direction of a community, or it's okay to have those questions and to say, I don't agree. And I agree with that. And that was largely a lot of the feedback I got. I agree. Totally. We should not be shutting down people's opinions. You should be able to say, I don't like something. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
But the problem is that it was interpreted as me and you saying, hey, we don't like Rob or Mike and Brandon. And, which A, couldn't be further from the truth, but B, if that is what we were saying, that would be a horrible, horrible thing to say. And which is why I totally acquiesced when I heard what people thought we said. And I felt horrible immediately. I didn't even try and defend it, because I was like, it doesn't matter what I meant to say. What matters is what people heard, and they heard something really bad. So I just feel horrible, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 100% agree. I mean, on the same page as well. What I think is important to realize is that what we were trying to say, because we did have a slide about community leaders with guidance, and I think it's important we try to make what the message of that one was meant to be, because the way it was presented was in no way, you know, the way it was interpreted by most people. So what I wanted to say about community leaders is that it's hard being you, right? It's hard being you, especially if you're an OSS community leader, how to communicate in the right way. And that means that you don't have the time you would like to express yourself on Twitter or a blog post or whatever it is. And I just wanted to emphasize that it's not the community leader's job to always do this kind of communication. You can be part of that solution. So if you feel like your community OSS leader isn't saying what you would like them to say, you can actually say, hey, you know, why don't I volunteer to write a blog post or raise a PR against docs that would give that guidance that you feel is missing? There's nothing stopping you from being a part of the solution.
Yeah, at all. Bro, you're at Microsoft. You're kind of a big deal. You're DevRel at Microsoft, and that means you travel a lot and you're at a lot of big events, right?
Yeah, it's been a few since I started.
When did you start at Microsoft?
October last year.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been on a tour. It felt like a global tour.
Yeah.
We've been doing something called Microsoft Ignite the Tour. And the idea behind it was to make sure that we delivered knowledge about different problems and how to solve them. So I think this tour was a little bit different, because we're able to focus on problem more than here's a new feature. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was delivered by a lot of CDAs like me or a cloud developer advocate. So all in all, I think we had a really great response at every site that we appeared at. And I felt like they were truly happy to see us. So, and obviously there's always a perk to being able to be the speaker that gets to, you know, fly around to different locations. And so, yeah, I definitely see my role of, you know, being this developer enabler. That's what I feel a cloud advocate is, or an advocate. But it's also important to realize that part of my job is to make the products better at you know, where I work. But that means I need to talk to a lot of people. So it's not just about writing blog posts. You actually need to get out there, which kind of aligns with what I've been doing with Angular and you know, different meetups and conferences. So it's kind of nice to see how things finally kind of aligning for me. And I think a lot of my colleagues feel the same. They keep on doing the job they've always done, you know, after 5 p.m. So it's really great to see people just, you know, living up and start shining. Because usually when you're when you think about DevRel, you've spent a lot of years being a developer, and you kind of feel like, but what about all this other fun that I would, you know, really like to do? You know, can I do that in my job as a developer, or do I need to change my role, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a very nice transition for me, but it's a very different thing too, because you got a home office and you need to work out how that works. And, you know, you need to set boundaries, because it's so easy when you get to work with your passion that you work all the time. So you know, starting in October, that means I had 7 months plus to actually figure out how that works. But I can say I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
But it's super fun gig. So,
well, that's cool, man. Where's your next talk at?
It's in Florida. Oh, that's right. Dev Intersection.
Cool. So what are you talking about?
I am talking about Angular schematics being one of the topics.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had a very nice talk with Michael Prentice about schematics. I think it was at IndieConf. So we talked about different things and the fact that schematics documentation have landed in the official Angular docs. So, and that's pretty cool, which means they're putting a lot of effort behind it. So yeah, I'm talking about that, but I'm also talking about GraphQL. So I'm kind of interested in the full stack. So yeah, I'm talking about GraphQL and microservices and how you can use the two techs to combine them and make a nice GraphQL API, and also how to host it in the cloud. And I believe I'm also talking about cognitive services, which are Microsoft's offering when it comes to AI services, and how you can use those and create really important applications. I usually say important over fun, because if you realize all the AI services you could use today, you realize how they can benefit other people. If you use, for example, image recognition, imagine using that in after catastrophe have happened, and you try to identify what's a static object and what's actually a person. If you have an algorithm like that and you manage to feed that to a video camera, mount that on a helicopter, you're able to find people and save people. So some of these technologies can be used for bad purposes, but that's true for every kind of tech that you have. But if you look at it, a lot of these AI technologies, they kind of make your apps really cool, but it also makes it possible to create things that wasn't possible before. So I'm actually very excited about cognitive services from that aspect, that there are so many cool things you could do with, you know, for example, language. You can translate that in real time and have it transcribed. You can help people that can't hear, for example. So you turn like audio into text. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of cool services that I'm really happy to be talking about. So,
Well, cool, man. If anyone has any questions for you, they want to talk to you about your video course or your conference talks, what's your Twitter handle?
So that's Chris_Noring, Noring.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, and appreciate all the hard work that you do for the community.
Thank you so much, Aaron. It was a pleasure being on the podcast, and I think it was great that I got a few minutes for us both to sort out especially the IndieConf incident. I think that's a good name for it. And, you know, I think it was important that we got out that, you know, we were trying to say what we were trying to say out of love and nothing else. But, you know, sometimes things don't land the way you want. And I think it's a good lesson for both of us in terms of, you know, when you're too busy with other stuff, then maybe you should do something else than doing a talk if you're not sure that you can deliver it the way that you intend. So,
yeah, definitely. I agree. All right, man. Everybody, reach out to Chris with questions. And other than that, we'll see you next time on My Angular Story. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Are you looking for a way to support the adventure? That's right, Adventures in Angular. Then look no further than adventuresinangular.com/premium. It's $9 a month and you'll get access to ad-free episodes. You'll also get access to bonus content. As well, you'll be able to join our planning calls every month where we sit down and we talk about what we want to cover on the show, who we want to invite, and we'll get your ideas on what we should be asking and what we should be looking for in our next topic. Finally, it's just a terrific way to support the show. So go to adventuresinangular.com/premium and sign up.